Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Billionaires. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, commenting on a recent initiative by the New York Times Magazine, a spectacularly illustrated and well-written observation of the billionaires with numbers to match, entitled, How Many Billionaires Are There Anyway? The question of how many is secondary to what's the use? Is it good or bad? And I read this paragraph from Will Staley, the author. It can feel as if we live in an era of defined by rage at billionaires, but most Americans actually don't have much appetite to eat the rich. We did quite recently elect a billionaire to the presidency. In January 2020 and then again in July of 2021, Pew surveyed Americans to see if they thought billionaires were good for the country, bad for the country, or neither. In 2020, 58% of respondents said they were neither. A year and a half into the pandemic, the number had barely budged. It dropped to 55%, neither. Some 29% think they're bad, 15% think they're good. It's not exactly revolution time in America. One cohort, Mr. Staley reminds us, does believe, majority, that billionaires are bad. That is the young. So, Richard, a very good evening to you. How many billionaires are there is replaced quickly by, are they bad for the country? You explicate this on the basis of, as the billionaires have increased in number in the 20th century and now into the 21st, how have the ordinary folk, the consumers, fared? Good evening to you, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very nice question, and it's a little bit technical to give the answer, but let's try it anyhow. There are two ways in which you could make $1 billion. One is the way Mr. Putin does it, by stealing it from everybody else. And to the extent that you're engaged in theft and take money from other people, the level of production goes down and the level of consumer satisfaction goes down. So the next question you ask is, if you look at the list of the top 1,000 billionaires in the United States, how many made their money by theft? And the answer to that question is probably very close to zero. So how then did they make their money? Well, there are two ways. One is they made it themselves, or two, they got it by way of inheritance. Interestingly enough, making it by yourself is usually more potent, because the moment you get to inheritance, it's going to be divided among several people. And the generative force that created the wealth is no longer going to be there to sustain it. If somebody's alive, has a huge billions of dollars, and keeps working, it's there. So those are the two ways in which you get it. Well, what do they do with the money, and how much do they give by way of collateral benefit? Well, the first thing they do with their money is they consume it. Well, what fraction can you possibly consume? If it turns out you have $100 billion, which means every year you're going to have, say, $10 billion in income, there aren't enough fine wines in this world for you to consume and not get cirrhosis of the liver. So what you have to do is you may have to build mausoleums. But that's not consumption. That's long-term investment. And consumption is very, very difficult to do in the traditional fashion when wealth is not a serious constraint. So what you end up doing for the most part is giving it away. The Gates trade or the Buffett pledge and so forth. You do it during life, you do it afterwards. And it turns out, therefore, that the distribution of the funds is very, very different from the way in which it turns out to work. And so essentially you get all sorts of other institutions, charitable institutions, that are essentially propped up by these billionaires giving services to the public. The second thing that these billionaires do is they make everybody else rich. There's a bunch of work done by people like William Nordhaus, you know, pretty good economist, Nobel Prize winner in this stuff. And you're trying to figure, in order for me to make $1 billion, how many billions of dollars of benefits do I have to confer on everybody else in society? And the number he came up with was, it's 49-to-1 ratio. You make $100 million and somebody else is going to make whatever it is for 49 times that. Why are you talking about this particular ratio? Because there's something known as consumer surplus. And that's the value that's attached to goods above and beyond their market price. And we know pretty much what that can be in the following way. You take an Apple computer today, and it's going to cost you, say, $1,000. And then you ask yourself, suppose they raise the price to $5,000, would everybody simply disappear from that market? Well, we know the answer to that question is no, because 15 years ago, people did pay $5,000 for a computer that isn't as good as the one today. So you could estimate as where people are going to start the drop off. And it turns out most people earn multiples of the price that they pay from using their particular computer, and competition keeps the price down. Well, if you take into account this consumer surplus and the transfer, the only conclusion that you can start to reach as an economic matter is in every way, shape, and form, the more billionaires that you have in society, the better the wealth distribution is going to be on the consumption and investment side, and the better the lives of ordinary people can now buy for much less money things that are much more valuable than anything else that they had ever had. And so when you're trying to look at this stuff, it's wrong to sort of think, oh, just look at their wages. What you have to look at is what their wages and their other income can buy. And that turns out to be a very, very large thing. What the egalitarians want to do is they want to tax these guys to the point where they no longer produce. The pie is going to get shorter. The consumer surplus is going to get less. The charitable deductions are going to start to shrink, and therefore the charitable contributions. So what happens is what I like to call Pareto pessimism. Pareto is the guy who said, you know, the society is getting better. Somebody's better off and nobody's worse off with the change. And the pessimal version of this thing, as I like to call it, is I'll make you poor on condition that I make myself poor. And it turns out that, you know, lose-lose transactions means that everybody starts to lose. So these guys, you look at them and you ask, do they talk about efficiency? Do they talk about distribution? Do they talk about creativity? Do they talk about innovation? I don't think there's a word in any of those articles that do this. What they do is they take the refrain of Elizabeth Warren and Barack Obama, you didn't build that, somebody else did. I really find that an insult. When I write an article, nobody else wrote it for me. What they did is they didn't kill me. If that's what it takes to be a joint contributor in something, then we're all joint contributors in everybody else's success and miseries.
I want to turn to the White House's recent document explaining the intention of the Biden administration to tax billionaires. It's entitled President's Budget Rewards Work, Not Wealth, with New Billionaire Minimum Income Tax. It makes this declaration. President Biden is a capitalist and believes that anyone should be able to become a millionaire or billionaire. He also believes that it is wrong for America to have a tax code that results in America's wealthiest households paying a lower tax rate than working families. President Biden's billionaire minimum income tax will make America's tax code fair and reduce the deficit by about, the number is $360 billion, in just the next decade. The way forward, if I understand, because there's a lot of explanation here, is that the tax, what is new here, is not on your income, but is on your wealth, your assets, and what they represent the last year or the last several years. I get lost then because we're talking about taxing money that has not actually been earned. So what is the boldness here, Richard? How is this going to render the situation more fair? I guess that's what we should put this. More fair in terms of the billionaires paying their share.
Well, the man is an economic illiterate to begin with. He wants to reward wealth. The question you have to ask is, how did they acquire that wealth? And most people have acquired that wealth by doing one of two things, either working for it, which is fine, or by taking risks. And so that if you're a capitalist who invests in stock, nobody expects the government to bail you out if it turns out that you lose. And the upside is the reward for the downside. So essentially, if he says that we only want to deal with labor, then we want to make sure that we are indifferent to the levels of investment that start to take place. Most of the people who turn out to be billionaires are a little bit of both. What they do is they earn a huge amount of money by taking wages and dividends, but they also take shares in their own company and then they start to sell them. That whole process essentially is completely benign because when they get the wealth out at the end, you do pay taxes on it. And it also means that you've got wealth to reinvest in another project to keep it going. If you put the taxes on in order to stop this, the risk taking is going to disappear. And therefore, the total aggregates of wealth are going to go wrong. Now, the other thing you ask is a technical question about what is it we're doing and what is it that we're not doing. Well, the Internal Revenue Code is a kind of complicated situation. And the economic definition of income that sort of underpins it says it's essentially any increase in your net worth on the one hand, plus any amount that you make in consumption on the other. That's the technical definition. Taxing consumption has always been hopeless, and nobody really tries to do it. So the question you're saying is, when do you tax the appreciation that comes on your investment? The uniform rule has always been, you wait until it's converted, either into cash or some marketable securities, which are easily taxable. And before that, the unrealized appreciation goes untaxed. And the reason you start to do that is it's a relatively simple event, and you don't interfere with the business judgments to nearly the extent that you do if you try to tax the income before the gain takes place. So suppose what you do is you have stock that you buy for 10, and now it's worth 100, and you don't sell it. What the Biden proposal says is we're prepared to take, say, 20% of that money and force you to sell or to mortgage that particular asset in order to do this. Well, that's going to have a huge level of disruption as people now have to start making transactions. The Biden people say, well, you don't have to pay it all at once. We'll lend it to you, as it were. You pay it over 10 years. Well, you have to put that loan on your books. Now you go to an investment banker and you say, I'd like to borrow money. They said, what's your collateral? And all of a sudden it's reduced either by the money that has been paid out or by the lien that's put on the property. So all the business investment stuff starts to get whacked up as you start to impose a tax which interferes with everything that's going on. And so what's happening is they misunderstand the creation of wealth. And then what they do is they impose the dumbest tax in history in an effort to try to capture it before its due time. There's been a good reason why for 100 odd years, nobody has ever sought to attack, in the ordinary case, the unrealized appreciation of stock. Then what you do is you have private companies. And how do you even value what the stock of those things is worth? It's extremely difficult. So now you're going to have these huge appraisals in these battles. You're never going to figure out what the number is. It's going to take you 5 years to figure out what the first case is worth. And then you've got to pay the second tax before you know how much you owe on the first tax. So this thing is like a snowballing down to hell. It's as dumb a proposal as you've ever seen, given by a president and a party, totally naive on the mechanics of business.
Let's turn to the French philosopher Thomas Piketty, because he's got caught up in this question about billionaires and billionaire tax and wealth redistribution when we come back. Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, Writing and Defining Ideas. He teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. I'm John Bash.
We use sunscreen para proteger la piel, ¿verdad? So why not be proactive protegiendo tu salud bucal también? Hola, mi gente, soy Amara Negra. Y con el sistema de prevención activa Colgate Total, tú puedes ayudar a prevenir problemas bucales como las caries y gingivitis antes de que empiecen. The reformulated toothpaste, innovative toothbrush, and refreshing antibacterial mouthwash were designed to work together to be 15 veces más efectivos reduciendo bacterial buildup, la causa principal de los problemas orales en solo 6 semanas, starting in week 1, compared to non-antibacterial fluoride toothpaste and a flat-stem toothbrush. Eso es prevention power, baby. Compra el sistema de prevención Activa Colgate Total visitando shop.colgate.com/total. Protect your oral health and be dentist ready.
What happens when tragedy uncovers the secrets we thought were buried forever? See Paramount Pictures Regretting You October 24th, the powerful new romance film based on Colleen Hoover's best-selling novel. Starring Allison Williams, McKenna Grace, Dave Franco, and Mason Thames, this heart-tugging story explores the fragile, beautiful bond between a mother and daughter, tested by love, betrayal, and loss. Bring your mom, your best friend, or your whole book club, and don't forget the tissues. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you'll leave feeling everything. Regretting You, only in theaters October 24th.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.